Hello, I'm Andrew Main, and this is the Andrew Main Stories Podcast. I'm recording this right now in my hotel room in Tel Aviv, Israel, where I've been both performing and lecturing here. It's been a really, really great time so far, and I had the great privilege of performing my liquid nitrogen effect in front of 1,000 people. And that illusion, which is actually more of a science demonstration, I actually drink liquid nitrogen. It's very dangerous and quite scary. I haven't done it in a while. But fortunately, I survived without too much injury and am able to record this for you now. Equally dangerous is the monkey paw effect, which I also got to perform, which involves the totally true story of how I defeated the mythical Monkey King and won the all-powerful monkey paw amulet. You really kind of have to just sort of see it to get it. Anyhow, here with this episode's story is Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Joseph turned the key over in his palm. Made of faded brass, it looked as old as the hospital itself. Stepping from the sterile white corridor into the gray stone second ward was like taking a trip back in time. This part of the hospital didn't have any official function, like the defunct boiler works replaced by an external heating unit. It was just a vestigial organ, forgotten. He'd been told to stay clear of the second ward by the senior orderly called Cotton.
"Asbestos, thick as fiberglass," he'd warned Joseph. "Like smoking 8 packs a day."
Joseph had heeded the advice until several weeks into the job when he'd noticed Cotton taking food trays into the second ward. His curiosity had been piqued. He'd tried to bring up the subject, but the older man just waved him off. Knightbrook Hospital, actually a mental institution, was filled with mysteries. Some of the patients Joseph had heard about. He was old enough to remember when Pirate Jackson held an entire rock concert hostage with his murdering mutineers and killed over 2 dozen people. Some of the other patients, like the Raver and Dr. Tree, he had to look up on Wikipedia. Joseph would walk by the cells and peer through the windows, try to reconcile the pale, confused old men with their supervillain personas. Pirate Jackson was an obese former computer technician who now spent his days doing crossword puzzles and cutting pictures of kittens out of magazines. Others weren't so harmless. The Raver would talk to himself through his cell door, always staying in the shadows. His cold, icy voice would start off asking innocuous questions about how he spent his weekend and quickly turn to asking Joseph about his dark places in his mind. He tried to stay as far clear from him as he could. Part of the Raver's reputation was his ability to get normal people to do horrible things. The breaking point for Joseph was his second week in. "I miss my phone book," said the Raver as Joseph walked by. Already regretting it, Joseph stopped walking.
"You don't have a phone, Stanley,"
Joseph said, using his real first name.
"Do you know why they took my phone privileges away from me?" he asked. "I was told you made prank calls."
"Prank." The word came off his lips like off the tongue of a serpent. The Raver sat in a chair facing away from the window. "When I was a teenager, I liked to call people at random. If a man picked up, I'd tell him I was seeing his wife. That was quick and fun. Sometimes the argument would start before he hung up."
"Charming," said Joseph.
"You have no idea. That was kid stuff. The last time I had phone privileges, I randomly dialed a woman and heard her screaming child in the background. I convinced her to kill it. I made her keep me on the line so I could listen. Joseph had known better than to engage in the moral discussion with the insane. I could teach you how to be persuasive, Joseph, the raver offered. No thanks. I could get a girl to do anything. The raver looked over her shoulder, still in shadow. Men, too. Just think about that. Maybe let me use your cell phone sometime. Joseph didn't bother to answer and kept walking. After a month, he had a pretty good grip on the patients of the hospital. Cotton had told them to watch out for them all, but some of you had to take precautions that went far beyond the protocols of a regular mental institution. In one cell they had the Blue Ape, nominally human. He was as strong as 10 men and had to be sedated with animal tranquilizers before anyone went into his cell or he was moved. There was a team of orderlies who handled special cases like that. They had all-white SWAT team gear and acted more like a military unit than medical professionals. Joseph had never seen him, but could hear him beating on the walls late at night when he made his rounds. The light fixtures in the corridor swayed from the vibrations. The last time he got loose, he turned part of the hospital and a nearby strip mall into a tornado disaster area. Joseph pushed the brass key into the inner door of the second ward and unlocked it. Cotton was out sick, so he used that as an excuse to himself to go check on whoever he'd been bringing food. A few other orderlies knew about the second ward. None would talk about it. He pushed the door open and entered a dark hallway. There were 7 open cell doors, no longer used, and one shut at the end of the hallway. He walked towards it. As he passed, the other cells he used as flashlights to look inside. Abandoned like the rest of the ward, they showed years of use and neglect. He could see indecipherable writing on the walls, insane manifestos by minds that were already going. He reached the shut door, black metal, held together with huge rivets. It had a small opening, shielded by bars. Inside, he could make out a dim light from an incandescent bulb. A muscular man in boxer shorts lay on the cot, staring at the ceiling. Up until that point, Joseph's mind had imagined a menagerie of possibilities. A physical being, and not some tortured ghost, had brought reality back into focus for him. Maybe the man was contagious, or had some extra-normal ability that required him to be isolated. Joseph regretted taking the key from the cabinet and going into the second ward, too embarrassed to say anything to the man who clearly knew he was standing there. He was about to leave when he heard a voice behind him.
"Doesn't say much," said Cotton.
Joseph turned around, red-faced. Cotton grinned.
"I knew the curiosity was burning you. Only a matter of time."
"Who is he?"
"Why don't you ask him?" said Cotton.
Joseph shook his head. "I get the feeling he won't tell me."
"He showed up here 18 months ago," said Cotton.
"Showed up? Like just showed up in his cell?" Cotton nodded.
"You could say he checked himself in. Won't talk to the doctors. When they tried to move him to another room, he always ends up back here. He's clever with locks. Could leave any time he wants to."
Joseph looked at the metal door and the surrounding ward. "Why here?" Cotton shrugged.
"It's
quieter here, I guess. More like a prison than a hospital.
So who is he? Repeated Joseph.
He's not saying.
Joseph searched the older man's face. But you know. Cotton winked. He pulled open the metal door. It was unlocked. He stepped inside and set a paper bag on the table. Joseph waited by the entrance. The man sat motionless, staring at the ceiling. His eyes watched Cotton, but said nothing.
"Let me know if you need anything else," said Cotton.
The man nodded, slightly. Cotton closed the door, walked back into the hallway. He motioned for Joseph to follow him. Outside the second ward, and back in the sterile white hospital, Joseph finally spoke.
"What's that all about?"
"We're trying to keep it a secret, in case he decides to leave. We especially don't want the other patients here knowing."
"Knowing what?" asked Joseph.
"You remember what happened 18 months ago?"
Cotton's voice lowered. Joseph searched his mind.
"Oh."
He turned to look back toward the old door that led to the second ward.
"That's when the night demon went missing.
Brick City's favorite masked vigilante. The best one."
Joseph pointed a thumb at the second ward.
"You mean that's him?"
Cotton put a finger to his lip.
"Hush, boy."
"He's been here all this time? Why?"
"Maybe he needed a time out. Maybe he decided he was just as nuts as the people he sent here. That's what the doctors think. The ones that suspect it's him."
Joseph could see there was some hesitation in the man's eyes.
"What do you think?"
he asked. Cotton put a hand on his shoulder and pulled him in closer.
"Remember what else happened 18 months ago? That was the same time Scareface went missing, too. He was one of the bad ones. Probably the worst. McGintry, the cop that works in the front of the building, told me they found one of his hideouts when they got an anonymous tip."
"What'd they find?"
"This never made it into the papers. Blood. Lots of blood. Scareface's blood. No body. But it looked like someone was killed that night."
"Night demon finally snapped?"
said Joseph. Cotton shook his head.
"Scareface was a bad man. Good riddance."
"So why's the demon here?"
"Why do you think?" said Cotton.
"He thinks he's like the rest of them? Here? Like he belongs here? That's crazy!"
"Hell if I know. Could be some other guy," replied Cotton.
"It's gotta be him. Whatever happened, he doesn't belong here."
"Maybe so. I think he knows that."
"Why'd he say that?" asked Joseph.
"I think he's here to pay penance. I suspect sooner or later he's gonna up and leave."
"Leave?"
Cotton nodded.
"If the man really felt guilty for what he did, he wouldn't be here. He would have confessed. That, or he doesn't think we can judge him."
"Can we?"
asked Joseph. Cotton didn't answer. He checked his watch.
"We need to get to the special unit. Help us search for the Raver's cell."
"What's up?" asked Joseph, his mind still on the night demon.
"We got a report of a cell phone signal coming from there."
If police officers have one of the highest rates of suicide of any occupation, you have to wonder, what is it like for superheroes? Some of the most interesting heroes are ones that have to deal with a lot of psychological issues. You have Batman and his guilt. You have Spider-Man, a teenager coping with guilt and the angst of trying to be a grown-up superhero while still dealing with all the issues young people have to cope with. You have the Fantastic Four and all their inner family dysfunction. There's the X-Men, people with amazing abilities, yet aren't accepted by the rest of us and are perpetual outsiders. And then you think about the supervillains. How would they be regarded in our world? Would we just look at them as eccentric criminals or people with severe mental problems who like to dress up in funny costumes? So thinking along these lines, the idea for the second ward came up, and I tried to figure out how might they fit into our world, and what would be the issues they would deal with, and how would we look upon them? Thank you for joining us. Until next time, I'm Andrew Mayne.